Greetings. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Tarp Radio on the BBS Network. We've got so much going on right now. I just wanted to cover a few things in the news that people have been asking me about. And we're going to get through that. And then we got a few announcements. And then we'll get with the show. We've got a great show tonight. And it's about technology and consciousness and a few other things. So anyway, just getting through the news, you know, in the news, Andrew McCabe was fired. Everybody below the seventh floor is doing the Irish jig on that one. This is the first domino. The rest are going to fall shortly. And following suit with the other deep state, you know, fake news and most Democrats, McCabe blamed Trump. You know, that's usual. Might as well blame the Russians. But anyway, just observing this stuff. I'm saying I'm not a Trump fan. I'm not a Clinton fan. I'm not any fan. I'm just making observations there about the news. You know, poor Andrew there, you know, the OPR and the FBI recommended his firing immediately. And I don't know what's in that IG report, you know, that got him fired, but had to be multiple offenses, most likely criminal offenses. But I'm wondering when these guys are going to take personal responsibility here. You know, it's like, everybody blame Trump. Russians did it. You know, it's just like, come on, you guys, let's take a little personal responsibility for this. You know, Russiagate's over. You know, they finally opened the gates and there's nothing there. Never was anything there. And unless you start investigating the Clintons and a host of other investigators, you know, the mainstream news folks had their hands in the cookie jar. So anyway, the lamestream media is having major layoffs. Numbers are way down. Project Mockingbird is failing. You know, this is tied into the CIA cleanup, and, you know, the people are waking up. You know, anyway, they're losing their funding, so they're going to have trouble with that. So speaking of the lamestream media, you know, capitalizing on the children at the Flora shooting to push their agenda, I think is totally shameful. I mean, they should be back in their history classes, you know, learning about the past tyrants, you know, like Hitler and Mao Tse-tung and Idi Amin and Stalin and a few others who confiscated the guns, use the kids to push their agendas, followed by mass genocide and abject poverty and, you know, enslavement by the elite. So this is right out of Hitler's playbook. So anyway, one of the guys funding all of these separation games is Soros. He's an admitted and well-known Nazi, and he's funding most of these events, Open Borders, Black Lives Matters, Antifa, you know, which actually has the exact same plague, you know, as the Nazis did back in the day. So it's time to wake up, teach your children there's more to the story. You know, I still believe lasers on stun is the answer, you know. So don't ban guns, just bring out the lasers and put them on stun. You know, you can maybe put a setting on there so they can't kill anybody, you know, who knows. But anyway, Clintons and Obamas are probably going to be next on the chopping block, because I guess this IG report and they're going to, you know, announce a special counsel too. So those other prosecutors already been looking into the, you know, pay to play and bribes and murders and everything else going on. So I think in the next few weeks are going to be very critical when people find their icons, political, music, and movie industry start falling. You know, the white hats are going to bring out, you know, a lot of information, but they're holding back on a lot because people aren't ready. You know, they can't talk about any kind of satanic spirit cooking, child sacrifice, and child trafficking, because the masses can't handle that yet. So, although they have been mentioning spirit cooking lately. So, if you don't know what spirit cooking is, Google it. They'll give you the opposite answer of what it is and just reverse it. But they'll say it's not really real, that it's a conspiracy theory or something else. But, you know, it's very real. Anyway, the lamestream media is already attacking the soon-to-be-released videos and knowing it will be their demise. So there are going to be some videos coming out now that are going to be very explosive. And the first ones aren't going to be what people think they are, but it's going to just keep going. And when these things come out, people are going to be shocked. I mean, their whole world's going to get turned upside down. And hopefully they can, you know, get back in touch with, you know, what's really going on and get back to the basics. But now here's another thing. Maybe we could talk about this tonight, but there's some extreme censorship going on, web bots, algorithms, all programmed to take down anything against the official narrative. And they've been deployed and they're being met with extreme opposition, you know, with an Internet Bill of Rights soon to follow. Major lawsuits are being filed. Now, on a personal note, my phone is text answering and calling people on its own. And this is really bizarre. And it's sitting there. Nobody's touching it. This isn't butt dialing. You know, it's something else going on. It's either an AI program at work or somebody just messing with us. And we have three separate DSL lines. All were tampered with, codes rewritten at the server. So luckily, we have other resources to keep the show going. But we're being shadow banned, and our newsletters and other social media have been throttled back to nil. And no new subscribers, which is ridiculous. But, you know, this isn't a coincidence. And this has been going on with us for a long time. So now that it's finally hit the mainstream, I'm glad this is finally coming out, you know, because, you know, they're censoring the wrong people, and these people are not going to sit down and just go away. They're going to find other avenues to get their information out. So also, too, UFOs are appearing around the world with undeniable videos. These are not the usual CGIs. A definite controlled disclosure is underway, and pretty soon there's going to be a disclosure uncensored, which is going to cover a lot of the higher dimensional things going on. So there's nothing to fear about the new kids in the heavens. You know, the negative ETs have been here thousands of years. The ones we're seeing now in the heavens are mainly they're part of the liberation process to free the planet and put us back in touch with our own programs. So, and we have a few announcements we need to make. So the applications are open for ESETI seasonal crew roles, you know, and if you go to ESETIevents.com, all the information is there. If you're in Portland, Ashley will be presenting the 2018 Roadshow at the New Renaissance Bookstore Sunday at 5 to 8 p.m. And information on ESETI events, again, .com is where you go to find out more about that. My guest tonight is Adam Curry. Adam is an inventor, an entrepreneur in a traditional high-tech startup, and has spent over 10 years researching the scientific study of consciousness. He's been featured on Discovery Channel's Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman and numerous feature documentaries and TV shows. At the age of 17, Adam received the MIT Ceres Connection Prize for an invention that converted electrogravitical signals into a novel earthquake warning system, later picked up by the USGS. I want an electrogravitic scooter. Maybe he can make me one of those here. But he explored the role of consciousness in the physical world as a member of the Engineering Anomalies Research Lab at Princeton University, has been a visiting scholar at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. I know those folks. And he believes in exploring the horizons of science, pushing the envelope in order to seed breakthrough discoveries and new paradigms. His latest invention is a mobile app called Entangle that connects users to a quantum systems through the mobile phone. The purpose of Entangled is to explore global consciousness effects, human interconnection, and the technological possibilities of mind-matter interactions. So without any further ado, we're going to welcome Adam to the show. Adam, are you with us?
I am, James. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, welcome to the show. I hope we weren't too little crazy on the on the introduction there, but I know you've got some amazing things. So it looks like you've been playing with electrogravitics and a few other things. That warning system sounds really interesting. I don't know where you want to start, but let's consider this your show, and you can take us, you know, wherever you want to take us, or as far down as the rabbit hole that you want, and. I'll leave it up to you to whatever you want to start off with, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, firstly, I have to disappoint you that I don't think I can deliver on that electrogravitic scooter. But
that's right. I have other friends that can, so that we can't talk about yet, but very soon we'll be able to talk about it.
Oh, can we expect a scooter as the first product?
Actually, it's a car, and it's already been. It's already been made, but I have to wait. I can't say too much about that, but it's already been created.
You know what they say about all good things.
Yeah, yeah. But it'll come out soon. But yeah, there's people that have this technology, and I've actually worked with these people. I've held this technology in my hand.
Really?
And Yeah, we have to keep it quiet right now. But, you know, on a more primitive level that I can talk about, they've actually taken some Rolls-Royce engines and bought a coal-fired electric plant and converted it. And now they're running it on water. So they're using water to run these engines to generate the electricity, and it's massive output. But anyway, that's the dinosaur model. They have other models too, but they have to wait for the right timing.
Yeah, I mean, exploring the horizons of science, I guess, and having a lot of friends in the garage inventor community, I've always heard stories about the water car and the the various apparatus. I haven't had the fortune to ever see something like that working, but the stories abound. So anyway, I will wait for updates on your show, I guess.
Yeah. I had Walter Rosenthal. You know, he's like the rocket man, NASA guy, and he actually is dead now, unfortunately. But I sat in a room with him and several other electrical engineers, and they took some of these apparatuses apart and checked them all out. And I was kind of like the overseer, and I had to sit with him in the room. And the inventor actually told him, he said, you know, if you can figure this out, I'll give it to you. And they never did. They never figured it out, because it's not science that's taught. Mm-hmm. It's science that comes to you. And it was quite interesting, but they put it all back together and it worked, and no batteries, nothing. They never did. They acknowledged that it worked, that it had amazing output, but they could not, they just couldn't understand the science behind it. You know, it didn't make sense.
I think if you were to drill down into many of the discoveries, or let's just say technologies that we take for granted these days, you would see an origin story that has its roots in the unexplained or in unexpected phenomena, mm-hmm. anomalies that are interesting. They're interesting because they're unexpected. And if the right circumstances are there, then those scientists or inventors or explorers can unpack or begin to unpack those anomalies and produce for the world the technologies that we've benefited from. And I think that's actually the way that it's worked, even though mainstream science doesn't really like to admit that, and they adhere quite steadily to the doctrine of the day. But that's what real innovation takes.
Exactly. You know, a lot of the great thinkers, Einstein, Tesla, all those guys, you know, they talk about how things came to them. You know, a lot of them came as dreams, and especially Tesla, he would dream and he would build these things in his mind first, and then they'd get on the engineering table afterwards. You know, so I think the more we explore the higher dimensional, higher mind, whatever you want to call it, and start accessing that information, the more we can bring these new innovations in.
I think so. And I think that makes a special room for the inventor or the innovator who's doing this not just out of the brilliance of their mind, but really on behalf of the wider population, right? On behalf of the wider consensus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems if your mind is right and you're really aligned with service to others, and you know, you've cleaned up your past, your old wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions, a lot of that stuff, and you rise to the occasion, these things are going to come naturally. That's my thought. You know, on the path to enlightenment, you're going to meet all kinds of different beings and receive all kinds of information. And if your focus is on technology and it's going to be beneficial, the higher, whatever you want to call it, your own higher self or higher aspects of yourself or the higher beings in the other dimensions will participate in that and assist you.
I think so. In Silicon Valley, where I was for many years, I had many friends whose careers really took a sudden turn for the better when they started meditating. And mm-hmm. that's kind of where you can begin to get over a lot of the sort of ego baggage, the service to self thinking, if you will. And I think by clearing out the mind, they just improve their focus and so forth. And I think that's true too. But they probably, at least the stories they've told me, is they're getting better ideas. So they're more creative. The ideas that they do have are more aligned with the trajectory of their company or their project. And mm-hmm. it kind of has made them better inventors. So I agree with you, James. I think that's true. I think historically that was true if we could go back and look at it. And maybe that's something that we can all do to kind of improve our own lives in these ways, become more creative, more productive, mm-hmm. start that process.
I know there's a lot of engineers on very high levels in some of these major corporations that don't really agree with the direction that the higher-ups are going. And they're pushing, you know, for things like more personal security, more access, more a lot of different things that are more for the people versus, you know, some other agency, you might say.
I can tell you that they are, yeah.
Yeah, and talking to these guys, and they said, yeah, the number one, number two engineer, they're saying, you know, these guys are all on board, and they're tired. You know, they really believe in, you know, universal law or whatever. They believe in the Bill of Rights and your right to privacy and things like that, and they're working in that direction. And I think eventually that's where things will go, you know, because these things do align with universal law, and I think eventually we're gonna. The whole planet's going to go in that direction just energetically. But I'm seeing that over and over again on some of the highest levels that people are getting ready to shift over in from the control mechanisms and back into personal freedom.
I think you're right. I think in the tech companies in particular, in the Valley, that area, there's a culture of fear about speaking up for these things. Personal mm-hmm. freedom, you know, all that stuff, because it's mired in the whole like political preference thing, which is the political correctness. So you don't want to be seen mm-hmm. as there's a danger in vocally expressing your opinions about things that might get you miscast as politically conservative and mm-hmm. socially shunned. And so that means that the voices in opposition to the control system are quiet, not because they're not there, but because there's social repercussions for speaking out. So the vocal minority in support of the control systems, if you will, are just, they're just that, they're just much more vocal.
Yeah. It's sad, but I think that's going to implode. You know, it's definitely going in that direction. The now you've got a lot of things that you've been, you know, playing with. Did you want to talk about some of the inventions you've been working with?
Sure. Yeah, I've got a lot going on, but I think the one that's maybe most interesting, at least to this audience, is Entangled. Mm-hmm. And Entangled is a project where we're exploring the nature of consciousness and how we might build technology around the real nature of consciousness that can do totally new things. And it, for me anyway, this kind of started like all good stories do with a synchronicity. I was a teenager in the year 2000 and I went to a bookstore and I was walking along the aisle of the bookstore and there was a book that was out of the row. So I picked it up and it was Super Learning 2000 by Ostrander and Schrader. You probably know it. And I opened up to one page and it was a chapter about this laboratory at Princeton called the PEAR Lab, which is an acronym for Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research. Mm-hmm. Basically, they're looking at, it was a parapsychology lab, essentially. They were looking at mm-hmm. whether or not the human mind could affect the world around it, affect physical systems. And so they had devised famously this experiment using what's called random number generators.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people in the community have heard of this. Mm-hmm. So a random number generator is basically in this case, it's a physical device that converts intrinsically random physical things, typically that's quantum noise, into a series of ones and zeros. And because that quantum noise or whatever that physical system is intrinsically random, those ones and zeros are going to be themselves random. They're going to be representations of the fundamental jostling of matter, if you will. Mm-hmm. So with ones and zeros, it becomes very easy to see if there's an imbalance of ones to zeros. If it was a perfectly random system, you'd have an even number of ones and zeros, right? And you do, until you, in the laboratory setting, ask somebody to intend, using only their mind, to make the machine produce more ones or more zeros. And this is what happens. So this is a very well-documented experiment. People will pre-state whether or not they want more ones or more zeros to come out of the device, and over a long enough data set, you start to get statistical significance. So that's a simple experiment repeated many times, but the implications are quite profound. It means that our consciousness, the nature of our minds, may not be limited to the brain. In other words, it may not be just an illusion of the brain, but that there might be some mechanism by which our consciousness is more fundamentally connected to the fabric of physical reality, really to everything. And many people, of course, throughout the ages have suspected this. Many people today, of course, still expect this, but we haven't had a robust sort of scientific theory to explain the mechanism, how that could possibly be. So the Paralab was started by the dean of the engineering school at Princeton in the 70s, and it ran up until 2007 when it closed. So I was like a member, intern, punk kid hanging out at this laboratory for many years. The Paralab also spun off in a way this project called the Global Consciousness Project, and it's an extension of the experiments there. And so one day some of the researchers, Dean Radin and Roger Nelson, had the idea that they might spread a number of these random number generators around the world, connect them to computers, and collect their data streams. And the idea there was that if there's something that might affect, if you will, global consciousness, or might affect the emotional content or the attention of the people on the planet, we might start to see order come through the randomness in that system. Mm-hmm. Probably many of the listeners have heard of the Global Consciousness Project. That's still going.
Yeah.
So I was a part of this, and when the laboratory closed in 2007, some friends and I got together in this company, and we figured out a way to make very low-cost random number generators that were powered by a USB port and had software. The idea there was that we could just enable the rest of the research community to continue that kind of fundamental consciousness research, right? We didn't expect necessarily that it would be very popular. Well, we were quite surprised. Thousands and thousands of people bought these systems, and there was a great interest in what we were doing and being able to be a part of the Global Consciousness Project or the Paralab. And so from there, we kind of went into research and development mode. How can we take this effect of consciousness upon the random number generators and use that as a kind of sensing mechanism that can go into technology and allow that technology, whatever it is, to interface directly with the subjective part of ourselves, with our consciousness. Mm-hmm. So we tried like many different things, and they were all successful in their own way. One, for example, we called the mind lamp, and it was a color changing lamp. Inside this lamp was a random number generator, and when there was a spike detected in the, say, more ones, for example, then it would pick a color at random and turn that color. And the idea there was that here's a really simple, non-graphical, non-numerical mechanism of feedback that people can experience the power of their consciousness. You approach the lamp, it's glowing white, and you think, okay, I want to turn this sucker green. And most of the time, there it goes, green. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, now you try. I want to turn it blue. Somebody tries to turn it blue, it turns blue. So you get the idea. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for several years at our little startup R&D office in Princeton there. And then we all kind of went on to different things. We sort of kept that running, but we went on to different things. I went to San Francisco to do the tech entrepreneur thing. This was 2011, so the second phase of the startup cycle was just beginning. And so I was a developer and designer and product manager for Venture Black, blah, 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 doing all the things that you're supposed to do. But deep in the back of my mind, since I kind of grew up in the community of consciousness research and exotic science and new paradigm stuff, I really wanted to bring that spirit, that energy of exploration, that really cool new thing to the world of Silicon Valley, because there was, it was left brain rich and kind of spirit poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many ways it still kind of is struggling to find and reconnect to that spirit. And so Entangled began as a mobile app that is a modern instantiation of the Global Consciousness Project.
So the now I know a lot of my listeners are probably going to be freaking out right now, and they're going to go, well, if you're entangled into your computer, can you untangle? You know, is it going to be something that's going to take over your mind or something like that? You know.
So your question there is interesting, and I'll try to unpack that later. But it's not reading your mind.
Hmm.
Really, what it is it's just a random number generator on your phone that's going to give you graphical feedback. The graph is going to go up or down, so you can play with it. We are going to collect data in the background in order to really expand the research possibilities of what you might call collective consciousness, what you might call that ineffable connection between all people that we can't really see, but we definitely feel. And so you're really participating in that. So if you're downloading the app, I suppose you're giving permission for yourself, your own consciousness, if you will, or your subconscious, to influence the bitstream on your phone in some meaningful way. An example would be, we do a mass meditation and you participate in the mass meditation. We can kind of collect this data and on aggregate see if it's behaving in ways that it should not. Is order becoming more, is the physical world becoming more ordered during these moments? And that can tell us something about how these phenomena work. Another would be, for example, premonitions. Let's say there's a lot of stories about people who feel like an earthquake is coming, or some terrorist event or natural disaster or whatever. If you could opt into an experiment that would allow you to, would basically ask you, your mind, to influence the phone, say, 10 hours before the event. And we could collect that data and see on aggregate if there's a significant effect 10 hours before that event. If we do see something like that, then we might have for the first time real empirical evidence of mass premonitions, indeed of some part of ourselves that knows something about a probable future. So if that appeals to you, join. If not, I understand.
Yeah.
I would say this. I think that giving your actual information, your name, your phone number, your likes, your dislikes on social media, what you post, what you say online, your credit cards, all of that is probably dramatically more dangerous than sending up some bits to see if your mind can affect them.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds pretty benign. I know they do have technologies like computer to brain technologies. They have some pretty crazy stuff out there that in the Black Projects that they don't want us talking about. But there's a good example of that is the Monroe Institute. At one time, they were working on a switch, and I was told this story by a very credible person. That they had a switch, and this switch was designed that they could flip this switch with their mind. And they've done movies about that. I think they did one with Clint Eastwood where he stole this Russian high-tech fighter plane, and you put the helmet on and you had to think, you know, what you wanted it to do. And he had to think in Russian or something like that. It's pretty interesting, but you know, I think that a lot of times the movies are just telling us what, you know, what's coming or what's already been built. They haven't told us about. But the this is really interesting. But they had this switch, and they developed this switch that you could turn. You could go in with just your mind, and you could turn on your lights, you know, turn on a heater, do whatever you wanted in your house. You know, now they got the little computers that do it, the little talking, little robots that do everything. Do all that, but this was like one step further where you could just your mind, you could switch things on and off. Have you heard about this technology at all?
Well, so the thought switch is something that people have been trying overtly and covertly to create for a long time. We tried to build a thought switch too, and we weren't successful, but we learned a hell of a lot about the nature of our own minds in doing so. And here's kind of what we learned, and I think this leads me to believe that the powers that be that are, if they're toying with this stuff, they might be kind of chasing their own tail. There's a, in the research, there's a phenomenon called series position effect, which in layman's terms means beginner's luck.
Yeah.
The first time you try something, you get a really good effect. And this is true at least 90% of the time with trying to affect a random number generator. I think it's actually true for all of modern science, because you can't really extract the experimenter from the experiment. But what happens is that whenever you try something new, there's a degree of excitement in the experimenter. There's a reason why they think it should work, because otherwise they wouldn't be trying something new. And I think all of these things combine to make an effect, let's say a thought switch that works, that while it works the first time, it stops working the second time, the third time, the fourth time. It basically declines back to a baseline. And actually, in modern science, this is known as the decline effect. And internally, scientists don't like to admit that they have decline effects in their studies, but they all do. I'm telling you, they all do. In fact, there's, I think, a well-known professor at UC Santa Cruz basically recently documented this, that the decline effect is a pervasive element in modern experiments. So here's what I think is going on. I think that to the extent that there is a Psi research or consciousness research program in, you know, your DARPAs or whatever, and it, we know that there used to be one, and I assume that it's something like that has continued. I just don't have proof. I think what's going on is probably for years, if not decades, they've been trying to create something like a thought switch, and it'll work for the first little bit, and then it'll stop working, and then one of the guys on the team will be like, oh, wait, well, what if we do this instead? And they'll make that change, and it'll start working again, and then it'll like stop working. And I bet that they're probably, on the one hand, getting effects that they shouldn't get, on the other hand, having a hell of a time making it consistent. That's probably what's going on.
You know, I have a theory about that. I have my, one of my theories is that it's kind of like when you manifest something, or you do some miraculous healing or whatever, and you pull this off, and you go in there, you go, well, you know, I don't know if this is going to work or not. I'm just going to just let go and see what happens. And you're kind of humble, and you do it, and then your ego goes, I did that. I can heal people, you know? And then you lose your juice. You lose your power, your connection. And then they try it again and it doesn't work. And if they can't, you know, the Americans say you gotta be like a hollow bone. You know, you just have to let it come through you. You can't control this, you know? And that's what I think these experiments is, as soon as you try to control it or you get out of the right mindset, they just stop working. They don't work anymore.
Boy, that's true, isn't it? It's so interesting what you said about the Native Americans and being a hollow bone. I think that you'd find a lot of healers naturally figure that out for themselves. And this is why they want to maintain, this is why they want to relate to it or come at the healing task as being more of a conduit than being the doer. Because when you try to be the doer, the effect goes away. But when you're the conduit, you can get out of your own like way and make the magic happen. You see that so often in the random number generator studies. Let's say that you've got a machine, a random number generator, and it's the graph is either moving up or down based on the output. And your goal in your mind is to try to make it go up. Basically, generally for all people, what you'd see is it starts to move up and move up and move up. And you're like, you're either psychologically, you're thinking, oh my God, I'm doing it, in which case it plummets right back down. Or you'd say something like, I'm so good at this, and then it plummets right back down. So this is true for most people. We actually have a name for it. It's called a rubber banding, where once the psychology of what you're doing kicks in and the ego with all of its weird things kick in, you see a sudden reversion to the mean, meaning the effect goes back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. Well, there's a Hawkins thing. I won't. Was it the David Hawkins, Power versus Force? And, you know, they have this number, I guess, this scale from 1 to 1,000. And so anyway, I had some people working on them and they told me, you know, what my number was. And I just went, oh, that's nice. I go, what does that mean? I didn't even know what it meant. And where they said, you know, you may not be around too much longer. But, you know, it's like, and I know other people that have gotten that number and all of a sudden it became a badge. And like, I'm this number and I'm that number. And pretty soon. And I think a lot of times you can push that. You know, if somebody's doing the test, you can go in there and you can push that. You can change that number. I've seen that happen over again, especially when you're doing things that sensitive. If you have somebody with any kind of an agenda or whatever, you can change the numbers. But, you know, when I was told that, I go, well, that's, you know, to me, it didn't mean, you know, it's like, that's nice. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's just, I try to get myself out of the way and end the separation game. Because the more you separate, the more, you know, the more special you are, the less enlightened you are, basically. And so, you know, I hear these stories and things and I go, oh, that's great. You know, that's nice. But I see that a lot. You know, it's kind of interesting in the spiritual community. You know, they have all these names and, you know, you can go and you can spend like $5,000 for a weekend and you get an avatar certificate and then you walk around and show everybody, you know, your certificate. And it's interesting when I see that and I go, well, you know, some of these lamas that have been studying all their life and these kids that levitate and do all these other things, you know, they got there by being nothing. You know, that's how they got to where they're at, is by being nothing. And they realize out of the nothing comes everything, and you're one with everything. So we have this backwards approach going on right now, trying to be something, and we already are something, we just don't know what it is.
I completely agree. This is why I say I was never successful at creating a thought switch, but we learned a hell of a lot about our own minds.
Yeah. Well, you know, it would be interesting to, I always thought, you know, in the future, I think we're just going to walk into our houses and just, you know, tell the temperature we want, you know, we'll, you know, kitchen light on, you know, or whatever, bathroom light on, and flush the toilet. We'll just be saying, you know, whatever we want to have happen, you know, basically just think it. I don't think that's that far away. You know, and I think the higher, what do you call it? The higher civilizations that, you know, that basically were their offspring, you know, a lot of them didn't have to start over as primitives because of the pole shifts and things like that. And they continued. So you can imagine where they are, you know, in their technology. And, you know, to me, it's just a no-brainer that obviously that technology is out there. God knows what we already have that they're not telling the people about. And I think pretty soon a lot of these technologies are going to start being released and into the, you know, to help out the planet, you know, for, you know, environmental factors and things.
Well, you said a number of things that I think are very important. And I actually have something of a, well, I've got a lot of crackpot theories, but this is my crackpot theory on technology and consciousness.
Yeah.
So there's more to the technology than just figuring out how, like, futuristic or new technology than figuring out how it works and getting it unsequestered and into the hands of people. There's also, can the individual or the group of people in question at a deep subconscious level permit themselves to experience that technology? Can it be, does a new technology fit within the current permission systems, or if you will, the consciousness of the mainstream, of consensus reality? And I would say that if you look at other types of phenomena that exist, like in the, like, strange phenomena or unusual phenomena in the in the panoply of human experience, you have people see UFOs. It's more common. You have people that talk to ETs. You have people that see ghosts. You have people that do anomalous healing. You have people that have been healed. You have all of these things that keep coming up again and again and again, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have people that see, you know, levitating devices or energy devices, and that may be. But so that's, I would say that there's different ways to look at it. One way would be that they're just the privileged few who have a glimpse of this. Another would be that there's something about their internal permission system that allows those experiences to happen. And then there's a second question, is like, do those experiences happen frequently for that person? And then there's another level, which is that do multiple people experience that phenomena?
Mm-hmm.
Do multiple people experience that phenomena consistently? Do 10% or, you know, 50% of the population experience that? And so the further you get into like the center of the bell curve, away from unusual people like us, the more normalized the world becomes, right? So there's not a lot of anomalies that are appearing to these people. And so
exactly.
So you see what I'm getting at. It's a technology mm-hmm. question, but it's also an internal work question, a consciousness question. So with a thought switch, for example, there may very well be thought switches out there. I haven't seen one. Maybe I have to do like, maybe it doesn't really fit with my reality. There may be other technologies out there that I haven't seen. On the other hand, I have definitely seen mind-matter interaction in the laboratory, and I can at least build an app that is followed by tens of thousands of people and giving them those experiences too. And so there's this kind of like two-step between consciousness and technology that sort of recasts the thing to look at the technology to seem this way. Technology will come into our world as an effect of our consciousness developing. Right, as an effect of us sort mm-hmm. of being ready. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense with the idea of ETs or advanced civilizations having these exotic technologies. It might be that those things wouldn't even work in our hands, that we wouldn't even know it if we saw it.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I tell you, there, I've had a lot of those experiences you're talking about, and it's kind of, and they just happen. I don't control it. I have some other friends. I know this guy that he does 21-day dark retreats in a cave, and he has a lot of similar experiences. He sees beings, you know, and he pulls his camera out and takes a picture, and there the being is in his camera. Okay, nobody sees it. Nobody, he can see it. He can get a photograph of it, and I think it's his interaction too with the technology that allows that photograph to happen. And he's had a lot of bi-location experiences, and they happen, you know. It's, I've had this experience too, when like one time these people invited me to go to Mexico, and I said, I'd love to go down there. The snow, it was snowing, freezing here up at the ranch. And I said, I'd love to go to Mexico. And I went into a meditation. I went out and I had this really vivid dream that I was in Mexico. And I come back and, you know, I come back out of it and I'm sunburned, you know, and I'm going, what's this? You know, what's this about? And then these friends of mine came up and they go, that was awesome. You came down to Mexico. And I went out to dinner, and I don't drink. And I actually had a beer with them and everything. And then I came back, you know? And so I go, are you sure that was me? And they go, no, it was you. 'Cause you talked about the classes and everything. It was definitely you. And I, you know, the little light started going on. And I've had several other bi-location experiences, but they don't happen at will. And I've tried to make them happen at will, and I'm not there yet. This other guy's closer. I know he's pretty good at it, but still he starts remembering being in a temple, and he goes, and he's thinking about it. And the next thing you know, he's out in front of the temple, but sometimes he's under like 3 feet of snow and he has to dig himself out. But it doesn't matter, because this guy can practice Tummo at, you know, the temperatures. He walks around barefoot up here in the snow with a t-shirt on, and it doesn't faze him, you know, so he's further along. But, you know, I've seen these things happen. I've had levitation. I've had bilocation happen. It's been verified at both sides when it did happen. I've been in vehicles, and one time I was just saying, you know, my back is killing me. God, I wish there's a way I can make this drive a little easier. And the next thing I know, you know, there's the off ramp, you know, to get off. And I go, I just did a 17-hour drive in 6 hours. This is impossible. And I had witnesses at the time, you know, that were in the car, you know, with me. So it's like, you know, when you verified at both ends and everything else, in my mind, my logical mind, I'm trying to think of an explanation. And the best explanation I can get is like, hey, somebody was listening and they beat me up, you know, or I could have just bilocated myself and the whole car. I don't know. I don't know how it happened. All I know is it did happen, you know, on more than one occasion, and I can't explain it. But I think about these advanced civilizations, to them, it might just be an everyday thing, you know, bilocating themselves and objects and jumping dimensions and appearing wherever they want to appear. You know, they may not need ships, you know, or anything else. It's just part of their, that level of consciousness on which they're operating.
That could be. That could be very interesting. I think, James, you're definitely pretty far out on the bell curve, my friend.
Yeah. You know, I usually don't talk about these things because people think you're nuts, you know, especially in the scientific community. But actually, I was with a guy that's got like 9 PhDs when it happened, you know, so it's pretty hard to argue, you know, this guy. Actually, I can't mention who he is, but he's the guy that has the other technology as well. But, you know, he's had devices where, you know, they're tables. They're like healing tables. And you lay on these tables and they create communication from he has another name for it. They call it your etheric body, which has a much higher expression of yourself. It's like your whole and healthy, perfect self. And it creates a communication with that level of yourself and your physical body. And so your physical body starts healing. And I was on this table and he walked in with 2 nurses and I was about 5 feet above the table, like levitating. And I didn't even know I was doing it. I thought it felt pretty interesting because I didn't feel the table under me anymore, but I didn't even know that was happening. And it kind of freaked him out because he said, if you would have kept going, you would have disappeared. And he goes, how would I explain what happened? You know, it's like, this is the last place you were seen, you know? So, you know, I thought about that and I said, you know what, you know, if you can't control that, you might not be able to get back. I don't know. But it's kind of interesting. All these strange things keep occurring. But, you know, I'm the first one to admit if somebody says, okay, prove it to me, I couldn't. I couldn't do it. You know, but if you hang around here long enough, you're going to see things that you just can't explain.
You know, I remember probably 4 years ago at least, I heard of your ranch. And I have a folder on my computer called Travel, and that's where it's like a vision board for things I want to do and places I want to go. And they tend to be all like unusual, exotic kind of adventure places. And I looked back in my travel folder, and sure enough, I had your East City Ranch there.
Yeah, you'll have to come out and check it out. I always tell people, don't take my word for it. Come out and have your own experience because this place is a vortex and the fields are totally different here, things happen and it ties into consciousness. If you're very much into the nature spirits and nature world, you know, that you start having those experiences. If you're into, you know, the UFOs, you'll see that, you know, I mean, everybody sees the UFOs. That's pretty obvious. You can't miss them when they come in. But if, you know, if you're tied into the masters and the higher dimensional stuff, that, you know, people see that and actually take photographs and things like that. So I think this land is just an accelerator. It accelerates, you know, whatever people are focused on, and also to healing. It accelerates the healing process as well. That both the awakening and the healing process. There's only one thing though. If you come here, and you have a lot of unresolved issues, a lot of anger and wounds and things like that, unfortunately, that gets accelerated too. And so it's a golden opportunity to heal, or, you know, you can blame and point fingers and run away, you know, which some people have. But it's a place where you can actually heal very quickly and gracefully, you know, or if it's too heavy, if it's something you're just not ready to face, the energy will come up and some people just leave, you know, they're not ready yet to face that.
I'd imagine too that there's something about going away from your home, away from your work and family, in many cases, to a magical place, to a special place that gives an individual permission to experience mm-hmm. something more, something that they don't usually experience. And yeah, you know, there's also, I mean, what I'm saying is that there's consciousness or psychology dynamics at play too. Mm-hmm. In addition to East City Ranch being just a very unusual spot, yeah. I imagine. And mm-hmm. think about the classic archetype of witches, or yeah. for that matter, Zen monks or something that experience mm-hmm. things that we think are crazy. What's one of the first things that they have to do? Well, they have to leave their town. They have to leave their encampment. It's typically they go away from, you know, the consensus world that they mm-hmm. live in. And there's a group of trusted people, right? And then they'll go out and they'll do the incantation and the spell or make the magic happen, see the anomalies. Or a monk or something in Tibet who goes away to the cave, right? And you can get yourself away from the damping effects of the rest of the people, maybe.
Social consciousness.
Exactly. And you permit... You see what your mind kind of permits you to see.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is that we also have fun with technology here. So, you know, we have third generation military night vision, and we have some pretty extreme night vision attached to the cameras. And we use illuminators, you know, that illuminate the field. And you see orbs everywhere, just unbelievable. And it opens up the next dimension. You can actually see into the next dimension. So we do have fun with technology here as well. And, you know, everybody's coming here. They're seeing them. They're photographing them. They have their own cameras. And I always feel like, you know, and this is an anomaly that's been going on here way before I came here. The Native Americans talk about a crystal city underneath the mountain and the UFO activity. It's in their legends. And Kenneth Arnold actually lost sight of the ships when they landed on the western slopes of Mount Adams. And he was the one that coined the word flying saucers. So, you know, there's a long, long history. I could go forever talking about the history of activity here, you know, even before people even, you know, were thinking about this, you know, it was like they had these experiences. So there's a long history. So there's, I always tell people things are happening here, whether I'm here or not. So
I believe.
So I'm not claiming, you know, all this stuff, you know, it's like, it's, you know, I've had people come and they go, well, UFOs have been there before you got there. And I said, yeah. And they go, well, why are you claiming? And I said, I'm not. I said, I've told people over and over, this has been going on for hundreds of years, documented, if not thousands of years. And I said, you know, it's just, I was guided to this place to do what I'm doing here. And kind of keep the grounds, you know, like keeper of the grounds or whatever you want to call it, but keep the energy clean here. But it's you know, it's interesting, you know, how everybody has an opinion about all this stuff, what's going on and everything. And I just say, you know, just don't be an armchair investigator. Come out and have your own experience. You know, just come with an open mind, loving heart, and pure intent, and see what happens. And they're not disappointed.
It's remarkable how easy it is, it seems, these days to see things that shouldn't be there, I guess, in the sky, lights moving at crazy speeds. I mean, especially if you have night vision goggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've had this stuff. What's funny, because we've used, we have a guy, I'm trying to remember his name. I'm going to have him on the show here real soon, and he analyzed all this footage we have. We have triple PhD Boeing engineers, NASA, Skunk Works guys. They've all come here and they've testified. They even came on Art Bell and testified, you know, that they have no explanation for what's going on here. And we've had remote viewers come up. And John Vivanco came up and he's going to do a workshop up here really soon. But he was looking at it and he got detailed information that I know, because I've seen these beings and I know who they are and who's on the ships. But he got detailed information that there's no way he could have gotten this, you know, with, because I haven't talked about a lot of it, but, you know, very accurate information. So, you know, we, we try to look at it from many different angles, you know, from the science, from the remote viewing aspect, from every angle to see, you know, see what's up.
Sounds like fun. When's the best time of year to come up to visit the ranch?
Usually August, September are the best times. July also is really good. June's pretty good, but sometimes it's cloudy. But I think July through September are the best times. And that's when, you know, we've got all kinds of events here. You know, we've got, and also too, we have Contact in the Desert coming up here pretty soon. I know you're going to be a speaker there. I'll definitely look you up. We'll have a booth there, and hopefully you'll have some of your toys with you.
Yeah, I actually plan to bring some for Contact for people to start to play with.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I like technology. People go, you know, it's some people have issues around it, you know, but I, you know, I said, well, we use technology to prove what's happening here. And you know, it gives people, it makes it okay, you know, for some people when they go, you know, they look through those night vision goggles and they see orbs all over the place. And then all of a sudden they put the goggles down, they start seeing them with their own eyes, because now their brain has realized these things are there. And people actually see with their brain. They don't realize that. Your brain chooses what you see. That's neuroscience, you know. And if it's not your reality, if you don't want it to be your reality, you're not going to see it. It's pretty basic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there's all kinds of stories about the Indians. You know, in the past, they couldn't see the ships because it wasn't their reality. But there's you know, what the bleep has covered a lot of that stuff. But I think it's great. I think it's great the technology that you're playing with too to bring this out. You know, that there is something beyond, you know, happening beyond tech, other influences that now can be measured. What's the best way? We're hitting the end of the hour, unfortunately. I know there's so much more we could have covered, but what's the best way for people to get in contact with you and find out more about the work you're doing?
Probably the website. The website is entangled.org, entangled.org, or you could just go to Google and search consciousness app, and we're the first two pages of sites that show up. You can get on the wait list for the mobile app. It's not out yet, but we're doing some beta testing right now and probably got another few features to add and things to fix before we launch that, but jump on the waiting list if it speaks to you. And yeah, I hope that this project can start to bring some more humanistic elements back to technology and provide something that's maybe an antidote to the dystopic view of sci-fi and technology that we're given in Hollywood, rather something that embraces and cultivates and promotes something that's closer to the natural world, closer to the what consciousness really is.
Great. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We'll have to do it again, and we'll see you at Contact in the Desert. And it's going to be an amazing event. And so I think the website's just Contact in the Desert, isn't it? Is it .org or .com?
Not sure about that.
Yeah, anyway, well, Google it. You'll find it. But anyway, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and I'll see you at Contact.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, it's James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Keep an open mind, loving heart. Watch the skies. Things are happening. And, you know, play around with these technologies. You never know. You know, they might be fun. You could actually teach some of your friends that there's more to the story. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.